Argue, argue, talk, 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 exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, up. Talk, why won't you listen? Argue, why won't you see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
Well, good afternoon, and welcome to Spouting Off. Well, after a, you would think, a rather mellow Labor Day weekend, that nothing much happened, but stuff is always happening. This is Karen Cataline, your proud and humble host of Spouting Off. I have a wonderful show for you today. After our first break, we're going to have on John O'Connor, the author of Postgate, How the Washington Post Betrayed Deep Throat, Covered Up Watergate, and Began Today's Partisan Advocacy Journalism. That is a really long subtitle. I was told when I was writing my book, what you got to do is have one or two word titles and then this long subtitle. Well, that certainly does qualify. How the Washington Post Betrayed Deep Throat, Covered Up Watergate, and Began Today's Partisan Advocacy Journalism. So not only does it talk about something quite historic, and I think that was when I realized that I was not destined to be your everyday average actress singer, because I remember I posted this on Facebook. I was putting on my makeup and I had a little radio listening to the Watergate hearings while everybody else was, I don't know what they were doing, but I was doing a show in the middle of downtown Denver. And that's what I was thinking about. I was thinking about the Watergate hearings. Now, for so many years later, I became a talk radio junkie, but I thought my my destiny was to be a musical comedy performer, and I really did love that. But compared to what I do now, which is a little bit of theater and some psychology, which I have a background in that as well, and then politics and current events, it's kind of like theater for normal people, or normal looking people anyway. But what I wanted to talk about in this first segment is something that I participated in yesterday. In about just a couple of days' notice, I was invited to go sing at a rally to support ICE at an ICE detention center in Aurora, Colorado. And it was headed up by a national figure who just happens to live in Colorado, Michelle Malkin, and Tom Tancredo, who was bringing the issue of illegal immigration to the attention of America long before it was any issue at all. Incredibly cogent, and the word I've always used for Tom is I can't think of it at the moment. You see, I did have a little bit of a break. It's good. I can't think of that word. He was prescient. He was a visionary, is a visionary still. And he's much loved in Colorado and much hated everywhere else. He was one of the first people, not ever the first person, to be called a racist simply because he wanted to have our immigration laws that are on the books respected and enforced. And, you know, God forbid today that you should want laws on the books enforced. But Tom Tancredo has never been an average politician. And he actually even ran for president in order to bring that issue to people's attention. And he did so with a tremendous flurry and, of course, brought the issue to the attention of the current president, Donald Trump. I don't know if he did it himself, but Donald Trump was certainly paying attention, and he's paying attention in a very, very big way. So what happened yesterday was there was a rally that was planned for just literally a couple of days, and talk show host Randy Corcoran was out there publicizing this rally. And of course, the left-wing people call them Antifa, but I'm not so sure they were Antifa. I mean, I didn't see anybody wearing black robes and that sort of thing. That Antifa, they wear masks over their head, probably because they're not exactly as proud of what they're doing, since some of them engage in violence. But we were greeted with bullhorns and ambulance sirens and all kinds of things. And the reason I bring this up, the rally was quite a success. It was very important. And I was glad that my loud operatic voice was effective singing through a bullhorn initially, simply to drown out the yelling and the screaming on the other side. It's always nice to be able to have a high C when you need one. And then eventually we got a sound system, and it was a whole lot better. There was a sound system that was used to have this rally. And by the way, the rally, and I have interviewed her before. Her name is Maria Espinoza, whose whole mission is to bring to the attention of others the numbers, the sheer numbers of tragic victims of illegal aliens, Americans who've been murdered, many of them police officers murdered by illegal aliens. And yet the people that were protesting didn't seem to care about those dead Americans. Somehow we were the haters. It was strikingly clear to those of us who were there who were the obstructionists, who were the people that wanted to shut us down. They did not want people in front of ICE supporting them. And by the way, for those of you outside of Colorado, I always want to mention, include you too, Michelle Malkin will be taking this kind of a support ICE mission on the road. She's going to do it in New York and other places. She is extraordinary and has been doing this for a very long time, has a huge following, is on Fox News frequently, and she's going to be taking this rally to support ICE, because ICE is suddenly the bad guy. Suddenly, the hard left wants to abolish ICE and says the most preposterous things, that they're running concentration camps. Well, number one, if you don't want to be detained, you don't want to be separated from your kids, and you don't want, there is no such thing as a concentration camp being run in a detention center. It's just simply not true. But if you don't want to be separated from your kids or detained, then don't come to a country illegally. It's really that simple. It's that simple. But somehow the left doesn't think America is allowed to secure their own borders, that somehow America is just an evil, evil country and isn't allowed to secure our borders. Where I'm going with all of this, believe it or not, is that the very next day, there was a television news report that came out, which many people rightfully complained was a biased report. And I saw it. It was a video. You can find it on my Facebook page if you're listening to this live. I think I posted it. Yes, I did. It's /KarenCataline or KarenCataline.com, all of those places you can find me, and Twitter, all the obligatory social media. And having dealt with the media a lot in this last week, I decided to just track this reporter down and find out why she didn't tell the rest of the story. She basically told the story of the protesters, but she didn't tell the story of the people whose rally it was. So here's what she said, and I want you to listen carefully to what she said. This is a young reporter, and by the way, quite sincere. She has run stories before, done stories that were in support of our peace officers and police and ICE. I don't know if she's done stories in support of ICE, but she seems to be in favor of law enforcement. So here's what she told me. And she said it in all seriousness, and I was really quite amazed. She said, well, we were called, the people that invited us, notice how she used that word, I think, the people who invited us to come were the people protesting this rally, which was to support ICE. And so they're the ones that, quote, invited us, and we got there late. And, you know, you guys didn't call us, and we couldn't get anybody to talk to us about the rally. But even more so, they didn't ask a lot of questions to find out the facts. So the young journalists today don't seem to know their job. They said, well, we reported what we saw. Really? Is that the job of a journalist today, is simply to report what you see without asking any questions? And that it's the people, the news, people who are making news, it's their job to come to you and ask you to cover the story accurately? The fact of the matter is the people in support of ICE didn't trust that particular news outlet because they have been treated again and again and again to biased reports. This, by the way, was the ICE detention center that made national news from Aurora, Colorado, all over the country, that sometime in the evening, I don't know when, that ICE detention center, people went there and hoisted a Mexican flag on the pole and defaced an American flag and put it back up again to abolish ICE. They defaced an American flag, hoisted a Mexican flag on American soil with detainees who broke into this country illegally and were being detained because they came to this country and broke our laws. That's the kind of upside-down logic we are being treated to today. And yet we're the racists and the bad guys. Can you believe it? That's what they think. They weren't interested in the dead people on the posters at the rally. And here's what happened at the way that it was portrayed on the news report was that it was not very productive because they were just yelling at each other. So they made it a moral equivalency that somehow people just showed up there willy-nilly and just showed up and there was a big argument. That's not what happened. What happened was there was a planned event, and the either Antifa thugs or whomever they were showed up in order to disrupt our rally because they didn't think we were allowed to have the opinion we had. They didn't think it was okay to speak up and support ICE. And that's what we are living in today, that kind of twisted logic and upside down ideas that somehow the people that are standing up for this country, standing up for America, standing up for the laws that are on the books, and appalled that there are politicians whose job it is to make law and to actually enforce laws have been advocating for lawlessness. I mean, that can't be emphasized enough, that we are in a stage, in a time, when lawmakers are advocating lawlessness. In fact, presidential candidates on the left, liberal presidential candidates, are advocating lawlessness. They want to, I mean, obviously, God forbid they ever get power, they'll want to abolish ICE. In fact, every political candidate on this hard left that controls the Democrat Party, they want to give free health care to illegal aliens. They want to force the rest of us to take health care and to pay for it ourselves. And they haven't their policies have not lowered health care. They've raised the cost of health insurance by a whole lot. But, you know, we should give free health care to illegal aliens. You think that's going to bring more illegal aliens to our shores? I don't know. Call me cynical, but yes, I do think it will. And it is meant to. I mean, for an entire left-wing Democrat party not to understand how transparent their goals really are is surprising to me. I mean, it's pretty obvious to the rest of us. And that's the point. They really, these people live running for president, live in the Beltway, wherever it is they live, most of them do, because they are elected officials, except maybe Marianne Williamson. She lives in La La Land, I think. To think that Americans are going to fall for the idea that we're the bad guys and that anybody and everyone should be able to come to our country. Now, I don't know if you've seen in your neck of the woods or in your neighborhood, but there are these new yard signs that are all over Colorado by leftists who have these. It has different colors and says we in Arabic and in Spanish and in English, probably possibly one other language. It says we welcome you to our country and it basically says anyone and everyone is allowed to come here. And I always wonder, those yard signs, I think I did a show about it about a year ago and took a picture of it. I always wonder what would happen if people simply demanded that the people living in those homes that have those yard signs open their doors, keep their doors unlocked, and when people break into their home, know that it is up to the homeowner to both feed, clothe, and educate those people that broke into their home. I mean, that's exactly what it is. And leftists simply don't believe that America either has that right or that Americans are real people that work for a living and pay taxes for a living. It's the reason why they keep demanding foolishly and falsely, very falsely, that the rich just have to pay more, as if there is an unlimited amount of resources that the rich have. Even the richest of us, and many of them are Democrats, make no mistake, including Michael Bloomberg and Tom Steyer. And I'd have to characterize the remaining Koch brother. The other one died, and I never, ever cheered his demise as the left did. The remaining Koch brother, who also, as rich as he doesn't have unlimited resources. And if you taxed the rich, it wouldn't begin to pay for what the left wants everyone to pay for. What they want is wealth redistribution. That's the truth. That's what they want. And our previous president, Barack Obama, even admitted that at one time. So just in wrapping this little monologue up, don't believe for a second. I don't think most of the people listening to me would. But don't believe for one second that just because there are leftists who lie about their socialist ideas or they're on the continuum of socialism, it doesn't make them far left. I mean, for Nancy Pelosi to look like a moderate these days just shows you how far left the Democrats have come. She's no moderate, and she probably agrees with almost all of the policies of, say, the Squad. She just doesn't want us to know that. So let's not fall for the latest ruse. They are liberals. They are far left. And we have, believe it or not, card-carrying communists and socialists. At this point, the line is so vague and small and blurred that are in our Congress today. Actual card-carrying socialists. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her bunch are both card-carrying socialists at the very least, America haters, Jew haters, and all the rest. So we have to speak out. There isn't any other option. When we come back, we're going to shift gears in a really big way. And we're going to talk not only about Deep Throat, but this last part of that subheading, which said how Watergate actually began today's partisan advocacy journalism. That I can't wait to hear about. So when we come back, we're going to have John O'Connor, author, with us. We'll take a short commercial break, and we'll have him when we come back. This is Karen Gadolin. You're listening to Spouting Off.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/AskAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/AskAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
This is Karen Gadolin, host and producer of Spouting Off. Got an opinion, a guest suggestion, or a show tip? Follow me on Facebook or Twitter and let me know your thoughts. All you need is to know how to spell my name. It's the same on Twitter, Facebook, and www.karengadolin.com. Karen is spelled the normal way, no goofy Y's or Q's, K-A-R-E-N. And Gadolin is spelled K-A-T-A-L-I-N-E. Want more Spouting Off? You can find the complete archive of Spouting Off shows at www.karengadolin.com. All my op-eds and blog posts are there too. That's www.karengadolin.com. Thanks for listening. And if you have a moment, please spread the word about Spouting Off. Staying with us, this is Karen Gadolin, and you're listening to Spouting Off here on BBS Radio. I am delighted to be joined by my guest, John O'Connor. He is author of a book called Postgate, How the Washington Post Betrayed Deep Throat, Covered Up Watergate, and Began Today's Partisan Advocacy Journalism. Welcome to Spouting Off, John O'Connor.
It's great to be with you, Karen.
Well, thank you for taking the time. In promoting this show on Facebook, I was reminded how when I was still a teenager, I was doing a lot of musical comedy, and I became an absolute junkie about Deep Throat. I mean, about Watergate. And while everyone else was getting ready in the dressing room, I was listening to the Watergate hearings. That should have been my first clue that I wasn't exactly your typical showbiz person. And yep. That's what I was interested in. And I am jazzed to find out more. So I'm going to let you just tell us why this is so important now and what kind of revelations you can whet our appetite about your book.
Well, let me start off with this, Karen. Same way, I was an assistant U.S. attorney, a young man in San Francisco, when the Woodward and Bernstein book came out. I was an avid fan of Watergate, and I was just transfixed by this character, Deep Throat, because his identity meant much, I thought. If his identity were within the federal bureaucracy, I would say, well, you know, maybe our bureaucracy has self-curative aspects to it, and we should look at this and celebrate who it is. Or were we just lucky? Was Deep Throat simply somebody that had an attack of conscience in the White House? So I was obsessed with it, and in 1976 figured out that Deep Throat had to be Mark Felt.
Wow.
I kept that to myself. I didn't think anybody would care what I thought. I went on, got married soon thereafter, had three children, and 25 years later, I'm sitting at a table with my daughter, who's with her Stanford friends, who had all run out of money at the end of the month for meals and decided they would come up and chow down at our house. So that's what I did. My specialty was beer and wine. I had that out. My wife cooked a meal, and then I found out that one of my daughter's friends was the grandson of Mark Felt. And that's when I started this in 2002. And I go through this in the book and go through really maybe 10 years of what I would call clues as I'm going through this and trying to navigate revealing Mark's secret and trying to get originally Bob Woodward to cooperate to no avail, to admit Mark was Deep Throat to no avail. And then we ended up doing a Vanity Fair story and then later a book. But the long and short of it, Karen, is for various reasons, I came to be curious. There were certain things that happened, and I don't want to spoil them. They're in the book. I wrote it like a detective book because that's what it is. And as clues came about and clues and clues and clues, much like the clues I was following back in 1974 and 5 and 6, I decided that maybe all was not right, and maybe there was something amiss about the fabled reporting. I'd always thought, Karen, that the very best journalism was exemplified by the Watergate journalism. You had a gold-plated source, Mark Felt, with Bob Woodward, who was very good reporter, very energetic and diligent. And this was it. And I had always been disappointed since then about the quality of our investigative reporting. It did not meet the standards that one would think would flow out of Watergate. Didn't Watergate set a template for this honest, fact-based digging where just the facts, ma'am, were coming out?
Mm-hmm.
Well, lo and behold, I come to find out that maybe Watergate itself was a cover-up, a journalistic cover-up. And that's really what I came to for various reasons. And now I realize that what happened in Watergate is a template for what is happening now. Let's think about it. Think about this, Karen. If I go into court tomorrow, there will be three or four or five lawyers that are there to correct me on everything I say that may be wrong or a fact that I omit. And there's a judge there with gavel that will do the same thing. And I cannot talk to a jury without those corrective forces being there. Now, if you're an investigative reporter and you're speaking to the jury of public opinion, who is there to keep you honest? On the other hand, if your goal is to hang a skin on the wall, aren't you incentivized by power, wealth, king-making or king-destroying ability, Pulitzer Prizes, glory, sex appeal, you name it, to get that guy.
And well, yeah, that, sure.
And that's what Watergate gave us, Karen. That's what happened.
And a big hit movie called All the President's Men, where you get to have, Dustin Hoffman and Robert Redford play you.
Yeah, can it get any better? You know, I would love, George Clooney to play me. I've suggested it many times. Nobody's taken me up on it. In fact, my wife says, well, why don't you say Ed Asner? That would be better, John, she tells me. You know, so anyway, so much for that. But in any case,
Hello?
But in any case,
okay, you're there.
What I would say is that we now have this situation in which reporters know that they're not going to be called on it if they simply cook the books a bit, if you ignore the obvious and print other facts, that you can select your facts, and you can color them and distort them as you wish, and nobody's going to check you. Nobody's there to challenge you. I mean, it's really very scary. And this,
John,
is what
let me ask you a question here. Your subtitle says so much, and I would love to drill down a bit.
Sure.
What's one way, for example, that the Washington Post betrayed Deep Throat? I mean, to the average person, Deep Throat's identity was kept secret until he himself came forward. We didn't find that out until he was much, much older. So how did the Washington Post betray him?
Well, I don't want to give away a lot. I don't want to, give away a lot of spoilers here, but let me give you one example here.
Give us a little.
What if you were informing on the mafia, and I said, I'm not going to tell you who the identity of the informant is, but I'll just tell you it's a very lively female radio host, okay? And then I describe you, but I never tell them your name. Mm-hmm. Would you sleep well at night, Karen?
No, I wouldn't. Wait a minute. So you're saying, just so I know, that the very fact that you, a very astute U.S. attorney, by the way, could figure out who Deep Throat was, you feel like they gave away too much and gave away his identity that anybody inside Washington could have figured it out?
Right. And why even say you had that source? Why even say you had a source? I mean, it sells books, doesn't it? It sells books. It's a good part of the movie. Okay. Now,
Especially that's just the name. Who named him Deep Throat, by the way? Was it Mark Felt himself, or was it Bob Woodward?
No, actually, Mark always said he was not Deep Throat, and he could say that because he did not answer to the name Deep Throat. If you said, hey, Deep Throat, he wouldn't answer you. It was a joke in the newsroom because at the same time the pornographic movie Deep Throat was coming out.
That's right, exactly. And that sexes up the whole story.
Case in point, it does.
Your story before that, that's what made it sexy as a story, because after all, Watergate wasn't exactly that sexy. I found it fascinating, but if you wanted to sell it to the general public, calling it Deep Throat, that's why I'm wondering who actually named the source that.
Well,
do
it
you
was
know?
The Washington Post. It was a newsroom. He's never been identified, but some joker in the Post newsroom knew that Woodward had a source on Deep Background. And deep being the key word. And so at some point, because the movie was so popular at the time and such a source of lively water cooler conversation, somebody said, oh, are you going to see Deep Throat today? And of course, everybody laughs. And then it took on a life of its own. So if you recall the movie does a wonderful job. And by the way, Hal Holbrook looks very much like my client.
Really?
And, oh, yeah.
He was wonderful, wasn't he? He was great in the movie. Loved him.
He was wonderful. And actually, Mark Felt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was Mark Felt equally as evasive as Hal Holbrook in the movie? You know, you're going to have to find that out for yourself. That kind of thing.
Right. Well, he was. And I don't think Woodward and Bernstein ever understood why he was the way he was. Now, I, as an assistant U.S. attorney, knew very well why he did what he did. He could not give Woodward and Woodward, he could not give him stuff directly out of the files. That would be violating his duty. Only James Comey does that kind of stuff.
Ah,
you're not
right.
supposed to do that. And if somebody finds out you do it, maybe the defendant, if you ever indict somebody, can move to dismiss the case because the government's done that.
Right.
So what he did was he said, look, you got to do it my way. And this is one of the ways I knew he was an FBI guy, because of what he was doing. Because I would do the same thing. If I were an assistant U.S. attorney, I'd say, look, I can't give you stuff directly from the file, but I can tell you if you're on the right track, and I'll tell you, you know, go this way, go that way. You might want to look over here, but I cannot give you direct stuff. And, of course, that way, if Woodward ever gets cross-examined, he can say, no, I decided to go see this person, and the first I learned about this was from the witness himself. So that's why that game was being played, so to speak. But Mark Felt knew exactly what he was doing. He's a smooth guy. And as he told me when he was 90 years old, he sat there in his chair. He said, wow. John, I don't remember a whole lot, all the details about Watergate, but I'll tell you this. I was one smooth guy. And
it's always fun to hear a 90-year-old say that, and you know he's telling the truth. John, can you hold on a minute? I got to take a break, and I am fascinated. I want to drill down a little more, not only to what you think of Watergate, if you think the story fully came out, but we'll move also to why you think Watergate was the beginning of today's partisan advocacy journalism, which is, in my opinion, atrocious. My whole monologue was about that today, oddly enough. So we're going to be back with John O'Connor. Thanks for holding on. You're listening to Spouting Off here on BBS Radio Station 1. Stay tuned.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/askAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/askAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
Staying with us, this is Karen Cataline, and you're listening to Spouting Off. My guest today is John O'Connor, a media analyst and author, former U.S. attorney. I don't know if he still is. We'll have to ask him that in just a minute. U.S. attorney John O'Connor, Postgate. How the Washington Post betrayed Deep Throat, covered up Watergate, and began today's partisan advocacy journalism. Are you still a U.S. attorney, John? Probably not, I bet.
No, I'm not. I was an assistant U.S. attorney, to be clear, which is, you know, one of the deputies. I started back in early, I think the first day of 1974, right in the middle of Watergate.
Excellent.
And I had voted for President Nixon in 72. I had voted for Hubert Humphrey in 68, Nixon in 72, and thought he had done a good job. And now here I am a couple years later saying, along with the other people in my office who'd all been at appointed by Nixon, many had, said, yeah, he's got to go. He, you know, we're all law and order people. We said, you know, he's done this. He's got to go. But one of the things we never got, Karen, was we never got all the facts. It's one thing to say somebody's guilty of a crime. I mean, Bill Clinton, Lord knows, was guilty of several.
Yes.
But the judgment was made not to remove him. The real question is, did Nixon deserve to be removed from office? And at the time, I was wholeheartedly in favor, with reservations. I was not politically his enemy, but thought he had to go. And then,
what do you think now?
Well,
what do you
now,
think now?
Well, now, if I had to go back and look at this from what I know now, I'd say, you know, I don't know that there's a fear to, in essence, invoke the political death penalty on him, which is what it is. And I think, and it's always hard after the fact for any juror to go back, reassess his decision because of confirmation bias. But I look at these facts and I say, you know, this thing, I don't think everybody in the country would have all agreed in one voice to get rid of this guy. I think it would have been, I don't think he would have been removed, frankly. And I think it would have been a very close question and perhaps not have happened because, in essence, this was not, as portrayed by the Post, a campaign initiative. They were not. Nobody can figure out at the time why these burglars wanted to go into the DNC. Well, there was no reason for a campaign reason to go in. There was nothing of value there. Larry O'Brien, the head of the DNC, had already left for the convention. Nobody was there. They had no information. It was a worthless burglary. You might as well have wiretapped Saks Fifth Avenue for all the information you were going to get. It was there. They were listening, and I go into my book, they were listening to, call them dates, Democratic out-of-town officials going to the DNC and making dates with the girls down the street.
Well, I've got a couple of fired questions. I mean rapid-fire questions, because we only have, I don't know, about 15 minutes, and I've got so many things I want to ask you about. When Mark Felt was 90, did Mark Felt agree with you? Do you think, did he ever say that he believed that Nixon deserved to be forced from office under threat of impeachment?
No, but what he did tell me was, and he did not have a great memory for details, but he told me very explicitly, I was not out to get Nixon. I was just trying to do my job.
In exactly. Other words, he was the classic whistleblower in a good sense.
In the good sense, he wanted to keep the investigation open. That's all. He wasn't trying to nail anybody.
Fascinating.
But yet, if remember this, Karen, Deep Throat goes into the garage at some point yelling, everybody's life's in danger, and writes in the air, Woodward later writes in the air, CIA to Bernstein. Well, you know, Mark Felt is nobody's fool. And if he goes in and says everybody's life's in danger because of the CIA, maybe that was true. But yet, did Woodward or Bernstein publish any of that? Of course not. That would
This is a $62,000 question.
Yep, go for it.
I never say 64 because there's always another question.
Yeah.
But compared to today, compared to Russiagate, Spygate that we've been treated to for the last 2 years, in which it's been revealed publicly right there that one campaign spied on another and then tried to frame the president for what they did, kind of makes Watergate look a little naive and innocent and, I don't know, Cinderella. What do you think about that? And what do you think is the difference here? Because, I mean, we're living in a totally different time. And my goodness, as far as I'm concerned, what we've been watching makes Watergate look like romper room.
Exactly. Look, Watergate was not a false or concocted criminal investigation. There really was a burglary, and there really was a need to get into it and figure out who was behind it. In contrast, today, Russiagate is much worse because the whole thing was concocted by our intelligence agencies. There's no doubt about it. This was just came out of their fertile minds, perhaps with the phony tip that came from Estonia or wherever. But that's what's scary about it, is there was evidence that was really fabricated by our own intelligence agencies to get first a presidential candidate and later a president. And that's what's chilling about it.
Yeah, and particularly, we now see the slightly more honest of the two reporters of Woodstein, as yes. they called him, was Bob Woodward. And Carl Bernstein has just, you know, gone bananas as a partisan hack on media, you know, on MSNBC or wherever he does his thing. But you notice with something as what you just said, and yet Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein have they said a word about this? I mean, you'd think that they would be speaking up loudly and wildly about how this is 100 times, 1,000 times worse. And yet, guess what? The media has just dropped it like a hot potato. They're on to the next thing. Well, now we have to go after white supremacy because, after all, the 2 years we've been trying to frame the president just didn't work.
Well, yeah. And even after Mueller's report, Jerry Nadler had John Dean come out and trot the old thing out about this being worse than Watergate. Let me defend Woodward and Bernstein a bit. I don't think it was really, they were privates. They were flat feet. They were not making the big calls here. And I blame this on the higher editorial supervision of the Post. They were just guys that were there doing their thing. So to a certain extent, I would absolve them like a private in an army, like one of Hitler's privates or something, you know. So I have respect for what Woodward did. I think he's energetic. I think he's a very good reporter. In this case, he was just part of something. Now he's in a position, can he come out now and say, oh, by the way, you know, all those prizes I've won and the movies I've been in, and my great reputation, really, my editors really kind of really cooked the books on Watergate. He can't say
and
that.
And we know he would never say that, of
That's
course.
Right.
The head of the Washington Post, what was his name?
Ben Bradley.
The guy at the time. Yeah, Ben Bradley, who was portrayed fabulously in All the President's Men. I love Jason Robards anyway.
Yeah.
So you're pretty much laying it at his feet, are you?
Right. And his feet and the editors below him, who maybe had great control, but they knew. They knew what was going on. And remember that they're generally... Most people don't know this. Their general counsel, Joseph Califano, a very powerful Democratic figure, was also general counsel for the DNC, which had been burgled. So the two of them together, there was no reason that they would ever sort of reveal what really happened in Watergate, because that would bring the Democrats into this thing. And the Democrats and Republicans were in the middle of an election. The Democrats were suing the Republicans over the burglary. Look, the Post was put in a position where, you know, they had to tank it. And lo and behold, for tanking a report, an investigation, they get Pulitzer Prizes. And they
Isn't
get rid
that
of a president.
True? And interestingly enough, I don't know if you had this in mind when you wrote your book, but Watergate has become kind of a thing with the Democrats. I'm sure that you paid attention when Peter Strzok and Lisa Page were kind of patterning themselves after, you know, they were very, very interested in Watergate, and they thought somehow they were going to be the next, I guess they thought they were going to be the next Woodward and Bernstein. And she said, oh, I better read that book. And Watergate has come out. And it's interesting because Watergate, as I said, this whole thing in which they had nothing, they had absolutely nothing. They just wanted to smear Donald Trump in the media. This makes Watergate look like romper room. And yet here's the Democrats all excited. This is going to be the next Watergate. What do you make of that?
Well, your insight was very brilliant. It, you know, really is the most palpable proof of my thesis, which is that Watergate leads to this phony stuff today. And it's who's going to be the next Woodward and Bernstein to take to depose a disliked president? Oh, everyone loves it. Everybody's incentivized to do it. usually happens more, I think, on the more the left side of the political spectrum than the right. I don't think people on the conservatives are going around saying, gee, I want to be the next Woodward and Bernstein. But this is what is out there. And, of course, most of the major media is not conservative anyway. So who knows what would happen
if that were the case. I mean, look at how, I mean, it's just stunning. It makes you have to pick up your jaw up off the floor when you think about the grounds, and I'm talking to an attorney and I'm not one, but when you think about the grounds that there were to impeach and call out under the carpet the previous president, Barack Obama, for, right, you know, doing deals with Iran and sending boatloads of cash to Iran, and then we find out he's spying on his political opponents, and on it goes. Never mind, you know, that it was a totally scandal-free presidency, and yet, right, the Republicans did absolutely nothing. The Republicans could not even bear to criticize Barack Obama for fear of becoming a racist, and I never saw so many grounds. Have you? I don't even know what your politics is. You don't have to be a conservative or Republican to look at that previous presidency and say, what the heck was that all about?
Yeah. And it's scandal free. And the reason it's scandal free is because because if scandal is measured by headlines, you are correct. There are no headlines. For example, where were the great investigative reporters in our country when 20% of our uranium was being sold and $133 million was being contributed to the Clinton Foundation?
There's a question, John. How about that?
Do you think anybody could have said anything about it? Do you think no one had a clue?
No,
hands off. So there's no scandal. There's no scandal. And, you know, we ship a lot of money to Iran, and maybe everyone was not honest about Benghazi. Maybe somebody knew that there wasn't a video. It wasn't caused by a video.
And because they don't revere little things like the First Amendment, it didn't occur to them that a president going after a little bitty filmmaker could put him in jail. I know they used some phony reason to put him in jail for having made a film. I think someone forgot to say, excuse me, President, and let's see, who else? All the other people, the long list. Even if you hate the film that he made, this is not Iran. I know you'd like to turn it into Iran, but it's not Iran. You can't put someone in jail for making a film you don't like.
Yeah. But, of course, what they were doing was trying to scapegoat him, of course, and everyone was supposed to say, that's the guy that caused those people's death in Benghazi. Yeah, and it didn't quite work.
That was appalling stuff.
It really was, and so there's so many different things. And even in this case, even in Russiagate, remember this, and people don't really look at all the evidence here, but people say that Hillary Clinton was involved in the Steele dossier, but, you know, Glenn Simpson's wife went to the White House right before Simpson got his money. And the DNC was really controlled by the White House. Everybody knows that. That's the way it works. There's nothing wrong with that. There's somebody in the White House who, and I don't know who it is, who runs the DNC stuff. So really, the Obama White House really had to sign off on the Steele dossier on that whole thing. There was some stuff in the Stroke page emails, I think it was in there, where they said the president wants to know what we're doing.
I remember that.
You know? So look, this whole thing, and it was really coordinated, not only with the Clinton campaign, but you figure the White House knew about this. Now, what details they knew, I don't know. They might have, they might have believed some of it, to be fair to them.
I think it would shock us, John, just how much they knew. You said it yourself. They were running the DNC from the White House. Notice that Donald Trump doesn't get the same thing. I don't think they're running the RNC from the White House. Maybe now they're softening up a little bit, the RNC. But I'm telling you, Donald Trump didn't have that particular ride along with any of the others. He's been scrutinized to within an inch of his life, had proctology exams up the wazoo. Boy, my goodness.
Well, listen to this, Karen. Think
what?
Yeah, think about this. This whole thing was not a criminal investigation, Russiagate. It started off as a counterintelligence investigation. Who is the person who runs counterintelligence investigations? The commander-in-chief. It is not a criminal investigation run by the attorney general. It's supposed to be the commander-in-chief's investigation. So we have the anomaly of having our intelligence agencies run a counterintelligence investigation against the president of the United States, and they don't tell him. They do not tell him. They meet with him, and they don't tell him.
It's
by the
stunning.
Way, we've got this going now. Just, yeah, you can't make it up. You can't make it up.
It is stunning. It is stunning. And what did they do? They used a friendly media. I only got a minute and a half.
Yeah.
But they used a friendly media to goad Donald Trump. They were hoping he would fire
Mueller.
Yeah.
And if
soon we forget. We can't even remember his name because he wasn't the guy we thought he was. That was just unbelievable. Forgive me, I have only a minute. What a fast, wasn't even an hour, but what a fast interview this was. Utterly fascinating. I might really want to have you on again. Tell everybody how they can contact you, how they can get your book. And boy, if your appetite hasn't been whetted now, you got to run out and get this book, Post-Gate. I won't read the subtitle. I won't have time to get your answer there.
Yeah, and it's called, and it's post, our website is postgatebook.com. And then, of course, you can go on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all that. And it would be great for people to pre-order it because I think this is a discussion, Karen, we need to have about our media and what we do about it.
Without a doubt. And this is the perfect book for people to read to understand that. And I think it's excellent. Thank you so much for coming on Spouting Off. Say it again. It's Postgate Book, right?
Yeah, postgatebook.com.
.com.
And it's Postgate, how the Washington Post betrayed Deep Throat, covered up Watergate, and began today's partisan advocacy journalism.
Yeah, a must read for all of us political junkies. Thanks for being on Spouting Off. Maybe we'll have you on again soon and see how the book is doing.
Karen, anytime. Okay, this is
my
fun.
Pleasure. Thanks for coming
fun.
On, and thanks all for right. your time.
See you next.
Well, thank you. That's all we have time for today. Thanks to Doug, my producer, who puts up with my technological challenges from moment to moment, and BBS Radio. Thanks to HW, the multi-talented guy with the IQ greater than that of a small soap dish. And tune in next week when there's going to be a whole lot more to spout off about here on Spouting Off.